Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham, joined this evening by Matt Knight.
Hello.
And Joe Branton.
Hello.
We are Jay Crossless this evening.
We are Jay. I coined that phrase.
Well, you did, yeah, in our Facebook Live hype video that we do before the show every week. We are still in Jay's flat. He is not here, but he has let us in to do what we will.
Well, he hasn't let us in.
No, he's broke in.
That would be very weird.
Yeah. Well, that's happened before, though, hasn't it? Didn't he let us in and then leave? Once.
No. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's that kind of guy. He's that kind of guy. Hello to everyone. If you're joining us live on amply.fi/guitar nerds, where we do the show live every Tuesday night, 8:30 UK time. We have got the chat up, I think, and Joe Branton is trying to log in.
Well, I don't normally do this bit. Jay Cross normally runs this bit, so, you know.
Your computer is so pony that I think it might not be working. It is pony. Anyway, so if you're joining us on there, if you've got any topics or anything like that that you want to join in on, Joe will be in the chat talking away. If you've got anything you want to suggest, then we can put that. You can put that in there as well. Matt Knight, how's things?
Very good, thank you. Despite my train journey this evening taking much longer than usual, all right, positively upbeat,
good.
I should say. Yeah, I've been working on a lot of things at work and also pedalboard things. I ordered a new pedalboard, which I'll show off next week.
Okay, I went
dual tier.
Really?
I've done it.
Okay,
yeah.
I saw on the Instagram page that you're doing a lot of rewiring and like people were giving you a huge amount of love.
It was one of those things where you kind of take one thing off and then everything kind of comes off and then
it's time
you can't put it all back together.
Yeah.
Then you're like, oh, I'll just start again. But it was good. I've kind of got a box of sort of pedals I don't really use very often. And like I pulled out the Count to Five. It hasn't been on my board for a couple months. So
why,
I was sort of messing around with that.
Why wouldn't that be on your board?
I don't know. It's a tricky one.
But you're never going to use it unless it's on your board because it's such
a
weird pedal.
Sometimes it's one of those things where you're like, I plug it in and it sounds great, and then sometimes I plug it in and it sounds rubbish.
It never sounds rubbish. It just sounds like I have no idea how to use this.
Yeah, it's just sort of and I got it to a point where with another delay pedal where it sounded like amazing, and I was like, oh, this sounds great. And then I kind of went back to it like a couple of hours later, and I was like, ah, what happened?
No, I just think
it's just like I don't know. I just think this is just some random stuff that goes on inside it that kind of stops it from.
I've started.
I just think it's the way you play and stuff like that changes. That it's kind of a bit like the, well, we haven't put the video up yet, but the Maleco pedal we did recently.
Yeah, yeah. The
which one was that?
The Charlie Foxtrot.
Oh yeah. No. Well, yeah. I guess it is a similar sort of unusable thing. I think the Count to Five is more predictable than the Charlie Foxtrot. The Charlie Foxtrot is super unusable. The only time
it's not unusable at all.
No. I don't mean that in a negative way. To me, unusable is a really cool.
I know what you
thing.
Mean. Like not in a, you know, it's not like a compressor or something that you'd have on all the time. It's a special effect. Definitely.
I mean, I might pop it out for a recording if I wanted something totally weird. But
yeah,
for a
thing,
pedal that's so unpredictable, you can possibly rely on it live.
No, that's true. That's true. I've been using my Count to Five a lot more, but I've been using it in the most basic way, like the first or second setting, I think, where it basically is just like an expanded delay pedal.
The loop, yeah, you can use it as a delay, and you can use it as sort of like a Rainbow Machine-esque thing as well. Yeah, it's definitely got like some cool modes. I tried it with an expression pedal once, and it was just kind of like, bent my mind. I couldn't really get my head around it.
It's
so weird.
That's the that's the next evolution, isn't it? That's the.
It's good though. There isn't really anything else. It is like truly unique, and you're seeing quite a lot of people with them on their pedal boards now as well. So it's kind of quite cool. That guy must be loving it.
Yeah,
it's
like, definitely.
Oh, I just got this one thing, and then suddenly the pedal community latches onto it, and now he's making loads of them.
Yeah, it's gone completely bonkers. Matt, I saw that you bought another new pedal to add to your board this week. Another
I
one
did.
For the
people who are watching us live can see it.
There we go. That's the what is it? Dan Electro Black Licorice.
What's the Black Licorice then?
Yeah, Beyond Metal.
Oh,
Beyond Metal.
Wow.
I didn't even look at the contract. Honestly, I saw it on eBay. No, I didn't. No, so actually, someone from the Facebook group tagged me in a sale post for this one. So someone
you've
don't
got a little
know.
Army of people finding.
Yeah, someone I don't even know tagged me in a Facebook. I think I might have spoke to him a couple of times just on the group, but yeah, he tagged me in that, and the guy was selling it for £15.
Wow.
So I was just like, I will have that. Didn't even look at it. And when it turned up, I was like, I'll just, you know, turn the gain down. Oh, there's no gain control. It is literally level, bass, and octave.
Nice.
An octave is on a switch. And it sounds amazing. It sounds ridiculously horrible, but also ridiculously usable. Yeah, I really wish that I could find someone who would rehouse all of these. I mean, they look so cool in their boxes, but I kind of like them rehoused and then keep the boxes, and then at least you can have their little case on display, but then they're in a more solid, like, usable...
Because
it's just the switch is a bit naff.
Yeah, the switch, there's no real... there's no real like good contact for when you switch them on. The switch is too soft. Yeah. Like, I know, and the big fashion at the moment is for these soft switches, but they're ridiculous.
Yeah, they're just not very good. I mean, I don't know if I also mentioned, I think I did, but I don't know, you can see it there. I also got the flanger.
Right, which is which one?
The hash browns.
Okay.
I think they ran out of ideas after Tuna Melt Trem, and they were like, oh no. Chili Dog Octave? But actually, the Trem, out of all of them, is probably the best sounding one. It sounds great. It really does. So there's still a few to find. The Chorus and the Phaser are the next two cheapest ones. So I think
What's the most expensive?
At the moment, probably the Leslie Simulator.
Which
it's
is?
It's like 40, 45 quid. The Rocky Road.
Well, remember that. Yeah, yeah. I prefer it, Matt, if when you mention these Dan Electro pedals, please never say what they actually are. Only just mention which food item they're named after.
Okay. So, yeah, there's... The next two are the Phaser and the Chorus. The pepperoni and the milkshake.
Of course. Makes sense. Well, yeah. Good. I'm glad the collection's coming along. How many more have you got to get? I'd like this weekly update.
I did have a picture somewhere of all of them. The ones that I've not bothered with at the moment are... And I won't say what they are, but the grilled cheese, the T-bone, the black coffee. I haven't bothered with any of those ones yet. They're not high priority.
Okay.
More of the other ones are high priority. More of the fancy coloured ones.
I just can't wait until the collection is complete. I think it's going to be...
I just want to work out a way that I can put them on the wall somehow.
Yes. Just Velcro and then cover one of your walls entirely in Velcro.
Actually... That's not a bad shout. You could build a frame with a wooden back panel and then cover it in like that super sticky Velcro, you know, the stuff that's like Lego.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then if I left enough space, you could probably still plug them in. So you could have it as a pedal board and as a practical wall display.
Bit weird for when people come around your house, though, I think.
Well, weird for people who don't play guitar. People who play guitar be like, "That's probably quite cool."
Soon as you get
maybe
that,
not.
As soon as you get that loft conversion done, Matty, that's your that's job number one. get the Dan Electro food pedals wall built.
I think it'd be really good fun to to just have them all. I think it'd just be it's a good, like I think I said it on, when I put a post on Instagram, it's like a good collection that doesn't really set you back a lot of money.
Yeah.
You bought a couple of months, it's only going to set you back like,
you need to get a pedal board as well, don't you? Because there is a, there's a matching
Yeah, the problem with the pedal board is it only holds six. So you
how
can't
many are in the range?
Like 30.
Right.
Yeah. You, or just buy multiples of the pedal board. Easy.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, sure. You could do.
Job done. Could job do. Done. I've been playing with some new pedals this week, as well as the Count to Five, which I've gone back to. Firstly, I've been playing around with the F pedals Phase Vibe, which I know we've talked about before.
Have we?
Yeah, we did a demo of it.
Did we demo it?
We did, we did a pedal of the week. It's the one where there's two versions, the Phase Vibe Lite and the regular Phase Vibe. The regular Phase Vibe is the one that has the wireless charging.
Have you tried that? Oh, we haven't got that one.
We've just got the light. So what I really like about it is three phase settings, modelling, not modelling, but, you know, voiced after different famous phases.
Right.
But it's really rich sounding. It fits in fantastically. I've just popped it on my board. It fits in really, really well. And phaser is not something that I'd normally go for, but it just sounds really nice. And the last setting on there is more of like... more of like a pitch modulation.
That's quite cool.
So you get a vibe sound, hence phase vibe. But it's, it's fantastic little pedal.
How much are they?
£99.
That's pretty good.
I'm not sure you can get them in the UK, but if you import them, it works at roughly as £100, something like that. So, cool pedal. But also, we received some new stuff from Walrus Audio.
Hey.
Indeed.
Hey.
Two new pedals, the Luminary... or the Luminary and the Contraband.
What are they?
Contraband is a fuzz, which, Matt, you'll have to remind me of the controls, but it's very, very basic, I think. I think it's just two controls.
No, the Contraband is just one control that controls the output and then one switch that goes between thin or thick.
That's it.
With a picture of a man fishing on the front of it, by the looks of it. Or he's carrying a sack full of rocks.
Yeah.
Can't really tell.
And, it's a cool little fuzz. Very aggressive sounding. And both sounds are usable, I would say. You know, a lot of the time you get fuzzes that... there's a load of controls on there, but you just don't really find a sound that's any good.
Yeah.
I find that more with the kind of more vintage voice fuzzes. Things like, you know, the Twin Bender that we did. I can see why someone would love it if you love those kind of old, really old fuzzes, like the Maestros and that sort of thing. But for me, that just kind of, for the sort of stuff I do, that kind of doesn't really cut it.
Yeah,
I like things much more like, you know, I've talked about my love for the Magnetic Effects White Atom.
A great fuzz.
But also this Contraband is really, really nice. Really aggressive, modern sounding fuzz with just a switch for two tones. So
that's
useful.
Quite nice, isn't it? Because I've always really favoured the Zvex series of...
fuzzes?
Yeah, no, what's the
fuzz
name?
Fuzz Factory.
Fuzz Factories, yeah, thank you, yeah. I've always really favoured them, but they're really control heavy.
Yeah.
But I've always thought that sort of modern fuzzes require that because you have to tailor them so much more to deal with your top end than you do sort of vintage fuzzes. But I totally agree. Things like the White Atom, and obviously I'm yet to hear the Walrus Audio one, but things like the White Atom where they just manage to make simple controls and make it all usable, because that's sort of what it's all about. If you can just... not have all the unusable bits, then you can simplify stuff down
totally. And that's kind of what they've done with the Contraband. It's just a really good modern sounding fuzz with two, you know, it's more like a kind of preference switch. It's not like you go, oh, this one's better for this song or this one's better for this song. It would be like, which of these do you like the sound of, I think is what the switch is there for.
Yeah.
So that's cool. And then the Luminary is kind of like an Electro-Harmonix POG in that it's a polyoctave generator.
So you get one up, one down?
No, I think it's two either way, isn't it, Matt? You should have the controls there.
I just had it up and I've lost it. It reminds me a little... Sorry, that did sound quite wrong. Where is it? Oh, yeah, the quad octave. Yeah, two octaves down, one octave down, one octave up, two octaves up. Reminds me slightly of the T-Rex one that came out recently called the Tritone, which I think was a very similar thing to that. But this one's also got filter and attack controls, a bit like the POG 2. But I quite like to try it because it's got this preset mode, and I couldn't work out whether that was just one preset or whether you can save...
As far as like, I... I've only played with them for about 5 or 10 minutes each, I have to admit, because I just got them delivered, wanted to make sure that they worked and let the guys at Walrus know that it's all good, and then we'll do the proper demo when we get time. But as far as I can work out, you've got no preset, so you're using the controls that are on the front. Yeah. And then I think it's 3 different presets you can switch between.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I think that's always the limitation of something like the Micro Pog.
Yep.
Without having to go to like the Pog 2, which is way more expensive, is the fact that you have to, you can't have presets on the Micro Pog. And then the Pog 2, you've got almost too many presets. So if you've kind of got like, well, there's 9, so you've kind of got to cycle through it quite a lot to get back to maybe the one you want.
Yeah.
I just think the thing that all of these are missing, I know they're going for probably analog more than anything, is MIDI. Because MIDI presets would just open it up completely then.
Definitely. Really,
if people are using switches.
Is there anything that does this sort of sound that's got MIDI presets?
You could buy, well, I mean, I use my H9, but the problem is it's just that touch digital.
Yeah.
Because you can definitely have, well, I mean, Chase Bliss Audio are the perfect example of having analog pedals that are MIDI controlled.
Yeah.
So it is totally possible. But yeah, if you go things like, I mean, the Whammy obviously is digital, but it's got a sound of its own. But a lot of the other kind of pedals that try to modulate that, things like the M5 as well, just sound a little bit almost too real, so they sound like really fake. Do you know what I mean? They're kind of like, they track too well, and it's like the old Boss OC2, which I had recently bought another one, but I sold one to Joe's. It's that the octave down is just a sound of its own that sounds really like synthesized.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just like a really good quality octave down.
Well, the Luminary's got a nice bit of warble to it, and in fact, Mac, isn't there a control on there that controls the
there
amount
is.
Kind of
what? Yeah, what? Flutter.
Flutter, that's it, which is very much like a kind of warble. So if you want that,
so they're actually replicating sort of the vintage lack of ability to track.
Yes, but also, you know, if you, one of the big things about those pedals is that if you have all the octaves up, you get a real kind of organ sound to it. That was always the big selling point of the original Pog. It was the first thing that made you kind of sound like an organ with your guitar, or in that way. And the Flutter just adds a bit more of that in, a bit of kind of like texture. And so, yeah, really cool pedals. We're going to be doing a full demo on the YouTube channel. So look out for that fairly soon. Excited to do that. Have you got any more news this week?
Well, about 15 minutes ago, I lost eBay bidding on a early 70s Gibson EBO.
Upsetting.
It was upsetting.
Very upsetting.
I'm on the hunt for something short scale at the moment. I really want to get something short scale and then put it into D standard and possibly drop C, just to prove to myself that it can be done.
That's silly.
It can be done, right? What do you think?
No,
you
don't
think
do it.
Do you think it can be done?
Yeah, probably. Get heavy enough strings.
Yeah, but you'd have to get long scale strings.
Yeah.
And then you'd have to try and wrap them around, especially on the low E.
Get someone to make you the strings. Speak to Rotosound. They'll do it, probably.
Yeah. Don't you think it's weird, though? Short scale strings for bass, like, are like 40 to 90 normally.
Yeah, but
I
mean,
so weird.
Most people don't have as kind of special requirements as you do. That's the
what? There must be plenty of people who like short scale basses who like drop tuning. Drop tuning is not unusual.
I think you'd be surprised.
Yeah, I think you'd be surprised too. Yeah,
do
I think you're basically. You're,
I hardly know anyone who uses standard tuning. Who uses standard tuning? Can you think of anything more boring?
Hello.
But that's the thing, I suppose. If you normally, obviously, that's why you want the thicker strings. But most people, if they picked up a short scale bass and they were kind of new to tuning and then tried to down tune it, it would be so slack that people would just be like, "Oh, this isn't going to work."
Yeah.
Or I'm buying a long scale bass.
Yeah, I mean, basically, what we're saying, Joe, is down tuning's pointless and you're a weirdo.
No, it's not that weird. But anyway, so I'm on a look at and really, what I want is I want a short scale Les Paul bass. That's what I want. But here's the thing, so I'm concerned.
So you want like backache, basically?
No, because I want a short scale one, so they're a little bit lighter. But I want that sort of thing. I want like a single cut, solid body, short scale bass, and they don't exist. What I want is a headstock that angles back. I want the back of the neck
Here's one
to
for
be
you.
All lacquered. I want a glue-in neck. I want all those things aren't that much to ask for. I can't go for a hollow body because there are plenty of things out there like Harmonies, Hofners that do these single cut models. Can't go for a hollow body because I'm going to want to drive it so much and it's just going to go mental. So those are my specifications, and I cannot, and it's killing me. Like, I barely did any work today
because you were just
trying to look for
you shouldn't admit that on the podcast.
Probably not, but I just trying to look for a short scale.
Here's one for you. I think they were not full scale, the ESP LTD Les Paul bass, which I think was called
it definitely wasn't called that,
the EC456.
No,
like
it's
that.
Too modern. It has to be, you're missing the point. It
it's
has
got to be retro.
Yeah, it's got to be like,
and there must be some shonky port. Porn
the old
guitar.
Guild Starfires and stuff. Yeah, there is. There must be somewhere. But that's the other problem. Then you go for those sorts of things. What do you get on those a lot? Wooden bridges.
Yeah.
What can't wooden bridges deal with? Down tuning.
Yeah.
So it's a real, like, I must find something. I was looking around Luthiers today to try and find, like, someone must have one of these in their catalogue, which is actually will bring us neatly onto the brand of the week later on. But, you know, for now, I... still just at a loss, and I thought this SG bass would come somewhere in, you know, into
didn't get it.
Well, went for less than £500 though, which is very cheap.
It's one of the weird ones where the big humbucker is in the middle, which wouldn't be my place for it.
No, I'd want it right in the neck position.
Yeah, but you still wanted to buy it anyway.
Yeah,
of course. And one last bit of news. I've been listening to a lot of talk radio recently, and I've been investigating how we can do a phone-in show. We should do a phone-in show at some point. Now that we're live streaming to the internet,
what would
every
happen?
Week.
Would I just leave the room and call?
No, we can get people to call in.
I don't think people will call in.
If you're interested in that, I'm going to start a thread on the Facebook group about how we're going to do it. And one night, we're going to do a phone-in show. I'm obsessed with this idea.
Right.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, no, I'm well up for that. Let's have a phone-in then.
I think it's going to be good.
It's going to be
good. Let us know if you're in the chat at the moment. Let us know if you would call in to the show. And let us know in the Facebook group too. Shall we do some news?
Nude.
Big news this week.
Big news.
It rolls around every year around this time of year.
Oh my God.
Before the Christmas decorations
but
go
why?
Up.
Why every year? Why every year? You could leave it a couple, guys.
Well, we're recording
and
this.
Why does it get consistently worse?
Maybe for the bases. We're recording this one day before the Apple conference. So, I mean, it's pretty obvious what sort of model Gibson are following. We are, of course, talking about the new Gibson 2017 models announced this week. Lots and lots of new guitars with varying changes, basically. Some of them are very similar to the 2016 spec, and some of them are brand new models altogether. Matt, should we do a rundown? Do you want to do the most obvious ones first? Things like Les Paul Standard, Les Paul Studio, because as far as I could tell, not that much has changed.
No. The other thing was, because I'm pretty sure, I mean, I'm out of, you know, as some may know now who have listened to the podcast, I'm out of retail. So I'm assuming this was a leak, right? Because it's still not live on the Gibson website.
Yeah, it was a leak.
Okay. Well, yeah. I mean,
a leak.
Retail.
And people can't see me doing the marks
air
in
quotes.
The air there. But it's definitely someone at Gibson.
I mean,
I'm sure they're just trying to do it to...
Maybe. Retailers are listing them. So I think it's fair to say that we can talk about it. So
Also,
leaked them actually.
Yeah, Joe actually is the king of leaking.
I wasn't the source of the leak, but I think I was the first UK people to leak.
No, that's not true, because in the Facebook group, someone posted it up saying, "Joe, what do you think of these new Gibsons?"
And
you went, "I don't know." And then,
yeah, that's true. And then I leaked it.
And then you leaked it
all over the GAC Twitter and Facebook. But yeah, it was thank you for whoever that was.
I think the most important piece of news, just to mention regarding these, just before any of the usual listeners, I know one of them who might switch off when we talk about new guitars, is that they're actually making left-handed models.
Really?
Of every one.
What?
I know.
But
it goes to show, it was only because they'd overproduced so massively in 2013 that they were trying to get rid of all that left-handed stock. It did stuck that meant that left-handed people had to then put up with not having any new models for a couple of years. But hey, literally nothing good came out for the next 2 years. So, so
maybe
you're fine.
The basses. So down on these.
No, but well, I think okay. So basses is the worst year in Gibson's history.
That is absolutely 100% not history. True.
Discontinued Thunderbird, discontinued SG, no rippers, no grabbers.
Yeah, but
like, this no, is
not yet, though,
mental.
I think there's some things that
madness.
Haven't been announced, though.
Yeah, there might be new stuff. Matt, let's we'll get to bases in a minute. I know you're furious and frothing at the
furious.
Mouth. Ready to talk about them. But yeah, Matt, we have... let's talk about some of the more standard models. What's changed from last year?
So what's changed so far, or what they haven't announced, I'm assuming what they haven't announced yet, is high performance spec. So everything that we're talking about is what they call T-spec or traditional spec. So it won't have the robot tuners on, won't have the titanium nut or the contoured axis neck heel. So we're talking a more traditional body size and shape. So the standard T. Now, as far as I can tell, the only thing that's particularly different is that there's two new finishes, Bourbon Burst and Blueberry Burst, which is by far the best finish ever made by Gibson ever, which is the purple and blue burst.
It actually looks alright. I was willing to hate that, and it looks really good.
It looks amazing. But as far as I can tell, they're saying modern body carve and internal weight relief, so I'm assuming it's the same. They haven't kind of said that they've done it differently. Still has the same coil taps on the two volumes, pull phase, and the blowout switch for disengaging everything and going straight to output jack. They say they've removed the pickup selector ring as well. I can't remember if it was there last time.
No, it wasn't. That's the only aesthetic difference I could see on the standards. Yeah. New finishes, and they've taken away the rhythm treble switch, treble markers, which is just seems weird.
I sort of agree with Joe in the fact that they probably don't need to do it every year.
Yeah.
Because you kind of think, actually, they could have probably just released a couple of new colours. I think it's just because they stamp it with a new year. But the ridiculous thing is, these will probably start shipping into stores by Christmas. So they're sort of going to land in 2016, and they'll have 2016 stamped on the back, because that's when they're built.
Yeah.
But every 2017
models. 2017 models, yeah.
I just think that the factory is just working so far ahead of itself. It's just, I think, you know, by all means, release new stuff. But when you call it 2017, it instantly, like, devalues the old stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that's, to me, that seems like a poor decision,
except for in 2015, when actually that increased the price of everything that had gone before.
Yes, maybe.
Yeah.
So that's the standard.
That's standard.
Standard is basically the same. What about the models that I would regard as standard? So things like the classic.
So traditional T. So traditional back. Couple of different colours. The biggest thing with these, they've put burst buckers in. So they were classic 57s, and now they've gone to burst bucker 1 and 2, and they're the same pickups they put in the custom shop 58s and 50. No, they're not. They used to be the same pickups they used to put in the custom shops. Obviously, they put custom buckers in the custom shops now. But yeah, so you're going for a much more old school PAF style pickup. To me, classic 57s always sounded slightly harsh. They just had that slightly brittle top end, and the custom buckers are just slightly warmer. They've got a slightly woolier bottom end to them, but effectively the same as last year, slightly thicker neck profile, AA top, no weight relief, but you've got the burst buckers on there. Then you go to classics. So classics were a model they bought back in 2016, not part of the original range, but back into, it was supposed to be like a limited run, and now I think it's gone to like more of a it's obviously like a standard production, but I think these are going for kind of like late 60s, early 70s.
Classics always been a weird one, because that was actually a guitar before the traditionals, wasn't it?
Yeah. And then, that was the time when they were doing standards with a 50s and a 60s neck,
yep.
And then classics, which just had like the 50s neck, if I remember rightly.
No, just 60s, because they had a...
just 60s,
if you remember,
right,
they had a pickguard on there that said 1960 on them. And uncover pickups. And I think even maybe they did them before you could get the 50s and 60s necks on standards. I think when there was just a standard which had a chunkier neck.
Yes, you're probably right, because I think they went away and then they came back as the Classic Pro or something, which were like an American limited model, and then came back. And then obviously, 2016, they had a limited run. So these are classic 57s. So they're kind of, I suppose the way you'd look at them is a plainer Les Paul traditional, but they've got locking tuners on, So they've kind of gone, here's the traditional body shape. Doesn't say about weight relieving, but I'd imagine it's probably in between the Les Paul standard one and the old Les Paul standard, which was like the what they called the Swiss cheesing, where they drill like the six holes.
Yep.
And then, yeah, classic 57s in that. So that's, they're going to be like 1700, I think. So they're only about 200 cheaper than a traditional. So I think if you want something with slightly brighter output and different finishes, gold top, a weird looking translucent green, emerald green,
like what
green ocean burst, I think is some dealers.
Everyone's loving green at the moment. I keep seeing loads of like new guitars coming out in green.
No, green's great. Green's great.
No, definitely not.
Just not in Gibson's.
The worst colour.
No, it's great where it sort of traditionally makes sense. So on Burns guitars, on Fenders, you know, on harmonies. But not on Gibson.
No, you're wrong.
Well, other than the Joe Bonamassa Epiphone Les Paul, that's an excellent green. We had this argument, didn't we? Because we thought it was Inverness green.
Yeah.
And apparently it's not. It's something unique to the Bonamassa.
Okay, Bonamassa green.
Yeah, whatever.
Bonamassa pier.
Yeah.
So those are the more standards. Where are studios at this time around, Matt?
So studios, slightly more expensive.
Okay.
Dealers have kind of leaked and listed the price at $12.99.
Really? For a studio?
Yeah,
that's, to me, that's even
studio,
high.
Because they were $10.99. I remember a time when they were like $6.99.
Mm-hmm.
And then they went to a more standard $9.99, which seems like the right price. £1,000 for that sport guitar seems like the right price. $12.99 to me, I'm sort of on the border with that.
Gibson and Epiphone went up across the board.
I think, well, I mean, a lot of things have recently.
Brexit.
Yeah, that's what they said.
Yeah, so, I mean, but they haven't really changed anything, apart from, they're saying ultra-modern weight relief, and I'm pretty sure they're weight relief.
What does that mean?
I think it's the same weight relieving as the standards.
Right.
There is actually, on Gibson's website, there is actually an explanation of the three different types of weight relieving they're using now. So,
what do you think about weight relief?
Yeah.
What do I think about weight relief? I think that I personally don't like how the standards
feel
these
days. Should we explain what it is for listeners?
Yeah, we've not talked about it for a while. Matt, have you actually got the diagram of the three types of Gibson weight relief?
I can find it though.
Okay,
we can probably talk about it off the top of our heads without it. So it comes in. So obviously you have.
Well, I mean,
go on, Matt.
I was going to see if I could find the most modern one. But I mean, for me, like if I was going to buy a custom shop, I probably wouldn't want it weight relieved because I kind of
you'd be going for something that was
I want the feel of a one solid piece of mahogany.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're going to play a standard and you play it and you like it, I kind of think, yeah, great. You know, doesn't really bother me. But yeah, there's three types. I don't know. I'm just having a brief look over here. So yeah, the first one, which I've always been told or has the nickname like Swiss cheesing, what they call, I think, more traditional weight relieving, which is basically where they drill nine holes in the kind of upper bout, so away from the control plate, and then obviously it's routed from the control plate to the toggle switch, and that's designed to just take some of the weight off, but it still feels like a chunkier guitar. You've then got full-on chambering, which is where basically everything is completely hollow, so there's barely any wood underneath, so you'll get that on things like the Billy Gibbons. And then they do modern weight relief, which is like a series of kind of like rounded triangle shaped holes that are designed to take off more wood, but they leave more solid wood around the bridge section.
Yeah,
so
you think this is a great idea.
Still get solid resonance and sustain. Yeah,
and you get this sort
of
thing.
But it takes off a lot of the solid bit. It take and around the edge.
Oh, you can't.
Still becomes a really resonant instrument.
You're sorry, Matt, you cut out there slightly. So you were saying that they leave kind of as much surface area as possible, basically.
Yeah, so they take off as much as they can, but still making it as resonant as possible.
Yeah. So my thoughts on it are that, personally, for me, I don't like the standards. I don't like that modern weight relief. I find that it feels it changes, for me, it changes the tone of the guitar and how the guitar responds. It's got a kind of semi-hollow kind of feel to it.
Yeah, that's what needs to be avoided, I think. I think there are ways of doing it. And actually, there are lots of brands that that do Les Paul-style guitars, and weight relief is very common in them as well. And no, it seems to be only Gibson that go for the modern weight relief system, which just seems bonkers because, yeah, I completely agree. It makes it sound like an ES.
Yeah, I kind of like it more on like the... I think is the traditional has got the traditional weight relief, hasn't it, Matt, with the Swiss cheese style?
No, the traditional is... And it was the same last year, is no weight relieving.
Ah, okay,
so
fine,
traditional
yeah.
weight relief came from traditionals in 2013?
Yeah.
2014? The one after, the one that Jay had recently was a non-weight relieved traditional. Yeah.
And that
and
feels...
then the ones after that became...
Yeah.
Yeah, it feels more real. I know that sounds silly, but it feels more real. Like when you play it, it plays nicer unplugged. And I know obviously that's not the main point when you've got an electric guitar, but when you pick up a Les Paul stand, you can kind of feel...
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Feel it?
Yeah.
And they are very light, and which is in one way a good thing, you know. But realistically, I mean, I had all my guitars out the other day. I was changing some strings. I was like, do you know what? I've never actually weighed my Les Paul. So I just put it on the scales I got in the bathroom, 8.5 pounds.
Okay.
I weighed my Strat and it was like 7.2. And I was like, it's a pound. There's like barely anything in that.
Yeah,
and when
yeah.
you use a wide guitar strap, it doesn't really make much difference.
Yeah.
So for me, I'm kind of like,
yeah,
you know, it's
should we run down?
One.
Let's run down the rest of the range. That's kind of your, I guess, your staple of Les Pauls.
Your
the standard,
core line, I suppose.
Standard down to the studios with the traditional and the other one, classic in there as well.
Yeah.
There's some other guitars, isn't there? Basically, do we know what's going on with SGs yet?
I think there's an SG Standard T, which as far as I can tell is the same as last year.
Okay.
Same neck profile, same pickups. That also goes for the Explorer.
Okay.
And the Flying V.
Okay, so just they're just a redo of last year's model.
Except I think actually the Flying V has Dirty Fingers pickups in it, actually.
Okay.
Which to me, probably my least favourite of all the Gibson pickups.
They're quite rowdy.
Really?
Yeah.
You don't like them?
Yeah. No, they're just...
That's ridiculous.
I don't know, harsh.
I kind of feel the same way I feel about things, something like the Duncan Quarter Pounder. I think it's just too much.
No, you're wrong.
I like a bit of subtlety out of the old pickups.
Yeah.
So, if they're staying the same, what are these kind of new... There's a few kind of... new models, some quirky stuff in there as well.
Yeah, so Firebird Studio and Firebird Standard.
Yeah.
Some nice ones. So Firebirds are kind of... They hadn't really gone away, but now they're kind of more prominent in the line.
Yeah.
So the Studio features two humbuckers, which are the 496 and the... the 496 R and T, which I think are very similar to the Studio ones. And then the Standard has got the mini humbuckers in, so more of the classic Firebird look. And they're really good prices, $10.99 for the Studio and $12.99 for the Standard.
That's fantastic. Like,
yeah, because they were $14 or $15.99, yeah. I think, before.
Well, and at times they've been completely out of the catalogue as well. You know, Firebirds have kind of come and gone over the years. Sometimes only kind of very limited custom shop runs have been available, and you've been looking at $2,500,
which and I'm sure people have paid that for them because they are one of the coolest guitars.
Well, completely.
Do you remember a couple of years ago, just before Gibson went completely insane when it came to basses, and they reissued the non-reverse Thunderbird bass?
Yes,
Thunderbird, Firebird, so the same thing. That was cool.
Yeah, the for a while the only Firebirds you could get were non-reverse, two humbucker, marble swirl, Firebirds. They were the only ones that are available, and they did a blue marble swirl and a red marble swirl.
See, that's great. That was what was great about Gibson.
They're unbelievably cool. Unbelievably cool.
Certainly on the on the Amplify group at the moment, Gibson are proving to be quite a point of contention.
Okay.
There's a lot of love. There are people who have pre-ordered 2017 models because they're so excited about them. And in some cases, they are very affordable for what they've released, things like the Firebird Zero.
Yep.
But yeah, there's a lot of people saying that, you know, that because of Gibson's choices over the last couple of years, it's really sort of turned them off, and some people are very bored.
It's silly,
Gibson's.
Really, isn't it?
Well, it's crazy.
It's like
yeah,
a brand Gibson that people love to hate, and it's kind of like, well...
Well, they've done a lot of mental stuff. They're a brand that they have everything going for them, and to manage to cock that up or even come close to cocking that up is quite impressive.
Yeah. I think we've reached a nice middle ground now, though. If you want a traditional guitar, you know, out there now, there's at least four Les Pauls that kind of fill that role. There's the SG, Explorers and Flying V's are back in a very traditional way. You've got some Firebirds now, which, like I said, were out of the catalogue for a long time. And yes, they still do all the high-performance stuff. You know, they do the things with the robot tuners and the tuners in the pickup rings and all that kind of bonkers new technology stuff. But you don't have to buy that. You can just buy a really nice Les Paul for not a huge amount of money. Or, you know, a Firebird for, what do you say, Matt? $12.99 for a Firebird.
$12.99.
I mean... Yeah. That price probably hasn't changed for, I don't know, 10 years?
I can't remember the last time they were that cheap.
Yeah.
I'm sure they've never been that cheap. Not for a proper one with mini humbucks and everything.
No. So there is one more Firebird in the range, isn't there, Matt? Which is a little bit more on the bizarre side.
Which one is that? I can only see those two, unless I'm missing one. I'm trying to use all
Firebird,
the different sources.
Firebird Zero.
Yeah, Firebird Zero.
Which is actually a topic that's coming up on the forum at the moment.
So the Firebird Zero, from what I can remember, Matt's going to look up the details now, is a non-reverse Firebird or a reverse Firebird. I can't remember. Basically, it's like...
It's off my screen. It's awful.
It's a Firebird that's kind of the wrong way around from the one that you know about. That is
awful.
No, you are
two humbuckers.
You are so wrong.
With a very different scratch plate. I'm totally torn as to whether this is a really cool thing or something totally disgusting.
Mate,
definitely going to be worth loads of money in the future. Yeah. They're going to be like
Matt
a ridiculous
Knight, I have never disagreed with you on a guitar, but if you don't think that is one of the coolest things Gibson have ever released, maybe the only good thing in the catalogue, then you're a fool.
So,
I mean, the more I look at it, so it's got like a Trini Lopez headstock as well.
Yeah, that's cool. Look at it.
I'm into that.
It looks like an old pawn shop.
Yeah.
Guitar.
It's uncovered pickups to me.
Oh, yeah, but you could change that.
So, worth mentioning, so this guitar, obviously...
Mate, the price point is why they're uncovered pickups.
Yeah.
The price point.
What I was going to say is if you're...
$500?
Just don't bury the lead.
Oh, sorry.
If you're listening to this, I would highly advise checking this out as in a kind of read-along style. Go and look at a picture of this. Because it is a cool guitar. It's very different. It's very much in that kind of... it's kind of like a Pelham Blue, I guess. I don't know if they're actually calling that Pelham Blue. Trini Lopez headstock, non-reverse body, with a very unique scratch plate.
Yeah, brand new scratch plate.
The key thing is, price-wise, $499. And
that
I think
is unbelievable. This is an American Bill Gibson we're talking about here. And in the past, when they've done things like this, they've made them satin finishes.
Yeah.
Or they've certainly made them very boring finishes. Mm-hmm. That, you know, you normally have like a satin cherry, a satin chocolate was one of the things, or like a satin black. Now, this is a completely unique Gibson in one of Gibson's most popular and most sought after colours for $499. That is amazing and ridiculous. It's really cool. I think it's a great move for Gibson. I don't think you can view a $500 Gibson Firebird in any other way
Do you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of a Fender Toronado.
Yeah, it's got very much that vibe, like just a fun, cool guitar. So just looking in the Amplify chat, someone in there is saying that he's just bought one for his 11-year-old daughter, is that right?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And that guitar is... perfect for that. If you want to buy an American made guitar for not a huge amount of money, that's just a fun, cool looking guitar, then that is a really, really good option.
Should I tell you what it reminds me of?
Go on.
The St. Vincent.
It's got a bit of that kind of vibe. Yeah, yeah. It's that same, similar finish, similar vibe. Matt, there's a couple more guitars. The Les Paul Custom Studio, I believe, which to me doesn't look like a custom or a studio, but yeah.
No, I think it's the same, it's along the same vibe as the CM they did, which is kind of like flat top, mahogany only, but they're, it's a Swamp Ash top.
Okay.
With some weird pickups that I've never heard of. DA5. DSA5 and DSA5 Plus.
Weird choice to call this the custom studio. Two established models that this doesn't really bear any resemblance to.
To either. Yeah. Very weird. Which is also weight... So it's Swamp Ash body with weight relief and then a Swamp Ash top. Very, very odd. I don't know what they're going for with that. And then similar is the one alongside that in part of the same range, which is the Custom Special.
Yeah.
Which, like, the way that I've, the photo I've got here looks like it's almost got like a beveled top to it.
Yeah, I think it has as well.
Yeah.
So this reminds me of the L6S.
S, yeah. Which I think is what they're going, because they're saying part of the Deluxe S series.
Right, okay.
So I don't know if they're kind of trying to bring that back.
Yeah.
So it's like a one, like, yeah, but it's a maple neck with a rosewood fretboard. And then part of this Double Slug series, apparently, is the name of these pickups. That's just very, very odd. But, I mean, it wouldn't be Gibson's new range without throwing a couple of curveballs in there.
No,
but just
course.
No Les Paul Junior, which I think is a massive shame.
No, I like it, because every time they don't do a Les Paul Junior, the value of mine goes up. So yeah,
to just, me, it's madness. Actually, that is actually a topic in our brand of the week as well. The non-existence of the Les Paul Junior in the Gibson line, but they have they've got something similar-ish.
Yeah. There's some entry level models there, which I guess is what where the kind of Junior comes in. Joe, you mentioned brand of the week. We're running short on time.
Oh, so we're just skipping bases.
No.
Let's skip Gibson bases, because there aren't any.
No, calm down.
All right.
I was going to give you the option. Do you want to talk about Gibson bases now and have a little less time for brand of the week, or do you want to talk about them next week in a bit more detail?
Well, brand of the week's quite short.
Okay, well, let's talk about the Gibson bases now.
Yeah, let's
do
that.
So, two new bases announced, is that right? Or one new bass announced?
One new bass.
Okay.
Just a four and a five string version, I think. I think that was it.
So far, we should stress that, like Matt's saying, there's been no official announcement, but dealers are listing some of this stuff already. So, yes, there is one new bass.
So, one new bass in a four and a five string. So, that means...
Oh, the EB bass, like that cool one they did a little while ago.
No, that's really popular and cool. No, so it's called the EB bass.
Yeah.
It's not the EB bass body shape.
Okay.
That they'd introduced
sort of similar vibe, a bit like retro-y
it's not retro. So what they've released is a very 80s looking what was Leo Fender's last brand,
G&L.
So it looks like a G&L bass. What they've made is an 80s looking double active humbuckered four and five string bass, by the looks of it, in a natural finish or a sunburst finish, scratch plateless, massive bridge, super modern, bolt-on... Oh, no, is it actually glue-on? What a joke. It's actually a glue-on.
So you know what these are? They're Tobias basses.
Yes,
you know Gibson bought Tobias... probably not that far off 10 years ago now.
A long time ago. And they've been doing very well. I thought they did quite a nice job with Tobias in the Epiphone.
Yeah, well, the Epiphones have sort of taken that design. There was some starter Epiphones that took the Tobias body shape.
You and me were sort of working in and around the bass department around the time that Tobias sort of turned up on the Epiphone.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you had basses that sounded great for sort of sub £200. Yep. I think they were, if you liked a modern look, they were literally the best starter bass to get. They kind of knocked Squire off of that sort of automatic entry level spot for a while. They were really good at that sort of level.
Yeah, definitely. So what they've done is taken that body shape and that ethos and
called it a name of a bass that has nothing to do with this.
Yep, exactly.
And released a four and a five string model. So far, no Thunderbirds, no SGs, no Rippers, no Explorer. No Explorer. But do you remember, like, a few years ago when we had, like, we had the Thunderbird, the non-reverse Thunderbird. They did the double cutaway Les Paul Junior bass.
Yep.
They did the
Les Paul basses.
Les Paul basses. But they had, actually, we do have some short scale ES Les Paul basses at the moment.
Okay.
Doesn't meet my criteria because it's ES, and they're also $2,000. But
okay.
And
you're cheap.
That. I'm cheap. But yeah. So they've done some amazing stuff. They also did that Nirvana signature model around then.
Chris Novoselic.
Yeah. Thank you. The EB basses were sort of around. All really great stuff. Like a really interesting, cool range. Oh, and of course we got the G3s. Remember the grabbers?
Oh yeah.
Three pickup grabbers.
They weren't great, but
I thought they were right. I mean, certainly the bass player from Paramore became the only famous person who was using them. But they were cool. But yeah, just I don't know what they're doing. I don't know how we can have a brand that have got such successful basses in the Thunderbird and the SG bass, and do something.
I think that they're trying something. This might be the year where they try stuff on basses and see what works.
Maybe. Sometimes it's disappointing.
Companies just don't want to. I mean, we see it from, you know, we do see it from brands like Marshall, where they're like, they've got the heritage, but they almost don't want to rely on it because they're worried that they're not pushing the boat forward.
Yeah.
But then they push the boat forward too far and it sails away and it's too late to reel it back in.
We'll see. So. I'm sure next year there'll be Thunderbirds galore, but you might have to wait 12
months. I really hope so.
We'll see. So no Les Paul Juniors or anything announced yet. And very much kind of more modern stuff, certainly on the basses, but also on some of the guitars.
Yeah.
And that brings us to Brand of the Week.
Yeah.
Brand of the Week. Very good.
Thank you.
Very vocal, as always. Who's Brand of the Week this week, Joe Branton?
Brand of the Week's going to be a little bit different this week again. I guess we sort of had, we started off with all those really super traditional, obscure 60s brands, and then we moved into we had a couple of super modern things after that. Last week, we did our first kind of custom shop series. Now, I think Gordon Smith, who were last week's, are an exception to the custom shop thing because they do custom shop perfectly because they managed to make it affordable, accessible, and everything else like that.
Great feedback on that, by the way. Gordon Smith actually, I mean, not the person, because that was two people, right?
That was two people, and they no longer own the company.
Indeed. Someone from Gordon Smith got in touch to say thanks for making us Brand of the Week. And we might go up there and have a look at the workshop.
Yeah, I really want to go and have a look around, have a look at how they make all their bits. Maybe
Indeed.
We can film some stuff. It'll be cool. We're going to sort that sort of thing out anyway. But we'll keep you posted on what happens there. So anyway, so this week's is also a custom shop. Nothing like Gordon Smith in that it's not affordable in the slightest.
No, and this is the other end of the scale.
I wasn't sure about doing this as a Brand of the Week because I've always kind of thought the ethos with Brand of the Week was introducing brands that people didn't necessarily know about that people could go out and buy. And because certainly our Facebook group is full of like serious sort of serial gas enthusiasts.
Yes, they buy a lot of stuff.
And it does mean that it's easier to buy a guitar to drop sort of £500 on a new guitar than it is 2,000.
Yeah,
and I think a lot of the people who follow Guitar Nerds buy a lot of cool intermediate stuff rather than sort of saving up loads of money on like an Ultimate. I mean, I would struggle to get an Ultimate. Like, if I was going to spend $2,000, I don't know what my Ultimate would be.
Yeah, I often think that.
Yeah, I'd rather own sort of several cheaper things and
have
options, I think, because I can't settle. I can't settle on one thing. Anyway, so this is absolutely contradictory to all of that because I've chosen a really expensive custom shop, which is something I didn't necessarily want to do. But I still feel that this brand are worth mentioning, especially for this sort of line of conversation. The group's proved it tonight. The Amplify group has proved it tonight. That people are sort of in two minds about Gibson because of the way they've run their company. So let's look at some custom shop luthiers who essentially offer really similar models.
G-style
guitars for about the same money because Gibson are charging so much for sort of standard line stuff now for a bit more money.
Those prices have come down from 2 years ago and they're sitting at about the right money, I think, now.
Yes, yeah, true, probably. You're right. But nonetheless, these are... thought I'd speak about a brand who offer the gaps. They plug the gaps that Gibson miss. And I also wanted to maybe speak about a couple of others briefly as well that do that sort of thing. So the brand I'm choosing, that Mark's actually mentioned a couple of times on the podcast in the past, is Rock and Roll Relics.
Great brand, terrible name.
Awful name, yeah. Really,
terrible name.
Really bad. So Rock and Roll Relics was set up by a chap called Billy Rowe, who actually was the guitarist in a band called Jet Boy.
Oh yeah,
sort of in the 70s. Okay. Do you know Jet Boy?
No, not particularly.
Well, don't say it like that. But yeah, so they were sort of they were coming up in the 1980s rather, but they got signed to a major label and everything, but you know, nothing came together from them. I've never listened to them. They must have been rubbish, I guess. But nonetheless, Billy ended up sort of building guitars for sort of friends, because he made a lot of connections through being in sort of a major label signed band, and yep. He loves old relict guitars, you know, and he started making the odd, you know, guitar like that. He became a luthier, started making the odd guitar like that. His little black book of contacts turned into sort of a company, and back in, I think it was 2005, Rock and Roll Relics was formed. Rock and Roll Relics, I think, if you check out their site, they are probably the best relic guitar company out there. I think from all the ones I've seen, there are loads out there, but I think from all the ones I've seen, Rock and Roll Relics really make some incredible looking guitars. They have a fantastic range, or like a really broad range of guitars.
They look so good. Again, you can't see this on the audio podcast, but do check it out. Yeah, is it Rock and Roll Relics?
Rock and Roll Relics, with an N, you know, rather than an N. So rockandrollrelics.net. And if you go on there, you can look up their instruments. Now, their instrument list starts with the Thunder model. I think the Thunder, well, they're called Thunders. The Thunders series is definitely the range that has defined them. They do lots of models.
Inspired by Johnny Thunders.
What?
Yeah, Johnny Thunders.
Oh, is that
the guitar
right?
player? Yeah, exactly right.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, Les Paul Juniors, yeah. Double cut Les Paul Juniors.
So that's what they are. So the Thunders can come in single or double cut, and essentially they are Les Paul Juniors. They do them in lots of options, so humbucker, P90, double P90, there's different positions. There's like the Model 2 P90 where you can have like one of the P90s in the middle and one on the bridge. There's loads of stuff. They are sort of the bread and butter, I think, of Rock and Roll Relics, and they are also what I think people know Rock and Roll Relics for. They do other things. They do like a Les Paul copy called the Heartbreaker. I don't really like the look of it. It has a really underdone lower horn, and it makes it look a bit weird for me. I'm not 100% into it. The other one that's really cool is the Starfighter, which is another
absolutely fantastic.
Another sort of junior style guitar, but the horns remind me more of the Gordon Smith style horns.
Yeah, or Melody Maker, Gibson Melody Maker, much more like that.
They're very, very cool. They do some Fenders as well, but the Fenders for me, they do sort of Jazz Masters, Jaguars. They actually
I like the
Jazz Bastard.
The Jazz Bastard and the Latee Bastard.
Yeah, we actually have a proper Jazz Bastard here, don't we?
We can't talk about that until Jay gets here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Jay got his offset telly that we've been talking about, and we'll talk about it next week.
Oh, okay, fine.
No, week after.
And they do some basses as well, but to be honest, the Fender stuff to me just is a bit like what Fender are already doing, and maybe that's testament to the fact that Fender are doing what people want and Gibson are possibly missing the mark occasionally. The one bass that they do, which is incredibly cool, which, oh, interestingly enough, ticks all my boxes.
That's weird.
They do a Thunders bass, which is a double cutaway Les Paul Junior with a massive sort of chrome covered Thunderbird style pickup straight in the middle, and it's short scale.
How much?
They do it in black. 2.5, I think.
Yeah, that's fine. You can afford that.
Yeah, yeah.
You're making it. Please, if you're watching on Amplify, please send in your donations now. Joe Branton, I mean, he won't get to put them towards that, but, you know, it might pay for him to drink beers on the podcast and money that you won't have to spend. You
I'll
know,
spend them on alcohol. But yeah, the you've got some great options. Anyway, so sort of things like, for example, the one that we've been talking about the most, the Thunders, the single pickup version, it starts at $2,400. And that comes, you can get that in four levels of aging, which is light, medium, heavy, and extra heavy relic, much the same as you can Fender. And comes in a few, a range range of standard colours, which are sort of classically Gibson, so you can get those in cherry, black, TV yellow, and an aged white. But they will price you up for sort of your own colour, because these are, of course, all made to spec. I think an incredibly good-looking, incredibly well-made range of custom shop guitars. If you've got something that you want in a Fender, especially a Gibson style, as I said, they do Fenders, but I think Fender are doing them. So it's almost like, why would you go to Rock and Roll Relics when you can get a Fender for the same money? But they're doing the stuff that Gibson isn't. So definitely go and check out that website, rockandrollrelics.net.
Anyone who does a Seafoam Green Les Paul Junior is arete by me.
Yeah, I mean, it's the coolest guitar in the world, and Rock and Roll Relics are awesome. I'm strongly thinking about one myself. But other than Rock and Roll Relics, I said that I wanted to sort of pull this in with a couple of other companies, because I don't think Rock and Roll Relics are on their own. As I was researching into this, I was finding loads of other sort of US companies that are really maximising on the things that Gibson aren't doing. So
Why don't we save this for next week? Because we're almost up at time. I feel that we should do at least one question from the Facebook group.
Okay, sure.
And we can go over this next week. Maybe we'll do a consolidated brand of the week.
Okay, so next week, I'll let people know. Should I let people know?
Yeah, tell them what you're going to do.
Okay, so next week, I'm going to be talking about Collings guitars, who I think are massively undersung for some of the like most well put together, really gorgeous looking guitars. Not necessarily going for a relic, just making your perfect guitar. Collings guitars, very small US brand. Definitely going to talk about them. And I want to talk about Echo Park, because I kind of feel like if you're going to talk about Rock and Roll Relics, you have to talk about Echo Park, because they're such similar companies. So
okay,
we'll talk about those as well next week.
Cool. Let's do questions.
Questionable motives.
And we're going to do one from the Facebook group. But in the meantime, Joe, if you want to just scout the Amplified chat.
Yes, I will. Yes, I will. Sorry, I haven't been on there. I was reading other things. Yes.
Ruben says, hello, Guitar Nerds. New member here. I'm looking for a good, affordable compressor. Came across the Moore Yellow Comp. Should I get one? Matt Knight, your thoughts on compressors with that kind of price point in mind?
The Moore one's actually very, very good. The Yellow Comp, which, based on the Diamond compressor, I mean, if you A-B the two, I think with like any of those Moore pedals, I think the difference is obvious. But for a cheap and cheerful compressor, they actually work really well.
Yeah.
Boss CS3, I know we've mentioned it a lot, but still relatively inexpensive tuner that does the job very, very well.
Tuner?
Tuner compressor, sorry. I was actually on the Guitar Nerds page at the time, and there was something I was like, tuner? What? No. Compressor. I'm trying to think what else there is that's not a mini pedal, though. It's because for me, some of the mini pedals.
Oh, I was going to say.
I mean, there's the Electro Harmonics Soul Preacher, if I remember rightly. Is that the name of the compressor?
Yeah, it is. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is a little bit brighter, which is nice if you're using humbucker, or if you want extra twang to like a Tele or something like that. That works really, really well.
Yep.
But for me, with maximum control in terms of a cheap price, the Boss one is very good. I have to be careful given my current standing.
Indeed.
But,
yeah, yeah.
I still think that is a very good one, and we have mentioned it a lot, and it works. And you've got more control than some of the more vintage style compressors that just give you volume and compression.
Yeah, how do we feel about something like an MXR Smart Comp? I mean, I know they're not dirt cheap, but they're not hugely expensive.
I just don't think they sound very good.
Okay.
I just think if you're gonna go down, most people, if they're gonna go down MXR, they're gonna go down the Dynacomp, which has got more of that traditional kind of snappy sound to it. I just think that's a better sounding one if you want more vintage compression. If you want a modern compressor, I mean, the Moore Yellow Comp does a very, very good job of that.
Yeah.
But for me personally, if compression is going to be a main effect for you and a main pedal on your board, I think you're actually better off spending the money and getting something better. And for not a lot of money, and I think they're coming soon, I'll just quickly Google it. We did mention it is the Pigtronics Philosopher's Tone Mini.
Yeah, I was looking at that the other day.
Be
thinking
a very, very good. The Philosopher's Tone Micro. They're in stock in the States at the moment, so I don't know if anyone's listing them. I know dealers have been fairly sparse on some of the Pigtronics stuff in the UK, but they're $119, so they're going to be like £100.
Cool.
And for me, I think that would be a very, very good choice.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. I think that answers the question nicely. Thanks, Matt. Joe Branton, any questions? Well, let's just do one quick question from the Amplify chat.
There are a couple. I'm going to do these. I'm going to do a couple and make them quick. So
okay.
The first one is if you had to choose.
Who it's from first.
Oh, sorry. This is from James 2.
Okay, good.
James 2.
James also.
He's deciding at the moment if I think there was supposed to be a space between moment and if you had to pick between a JCM 800 and 900 reissue, which would you choose?
Matt and I, do you want to say the obvious first?
I mean, that is a really obvious choice.
Yeah, I mean, 800.
Yep. For me, 800 every time. 900s for me are too fizzy. And I think that's kind of the general wisdom, really. I guess they do the reissue because, you know, there's still some affection out there for 900s. But for me, the 800,
absolutely,
hands down, every
absolutely
time. Every time. Let's do one last question.
The other one was just a very quick one. Sam Harding Music had asked if anyone had any experience with the Fender American Vintage 63 Precision Bass.
Oh, Joe Branton, this sounds like a question for you to answer.
Well, also for you. I'm sure you've had...
The 60s reissue American vintage stuff. Yeah. For me, doesn't work because the neck is too wide.
Yes. So this was a weird period for Gibson where they made
Gibson
for Fender.
Yeah.
Where they made the they were rosewood necks and they made them quite wide but quite shallow.
Yes.
But it wasn't that they made them wide. They were the same as the 50s. They were the same as like the 55.
Really?
I'm sure they
were.
No,
they're definitely wider. The nut is massive on a early 60s P bass.
It's a lot to get your hand around. The weird thing was that they made them shallower as well.
Yeah.
And that made them just, I've always felt very un-Fendery in the way that they feel. Like, it doesn't feel like, you know how a jazz bass is going to feel.
Yeah.
That they've changed a little bit, but more or less, we all know what a jazz bass feels like.
Know how P bass feels.
And a 50s P bass, feels
the same
way.
Yeah, or just modern P bass.
Oh, yeah, there were wimps out there who play modern P basses.
Like all the cool guys.
No one plays modern P basses, mate.
All the
They're
cool
awful.
Guys.
But there's 50s P basses, which were good. That was the last time Fender made a good P bass, the 50s.
Unbelievable.
The 63 is all right, but just be aware it will feel really weird in comparison to a Mexican, an American standard, a 50s reissue. They were just an odd,
incredibly well built. Like the at the point where they changed it from the 62 to the 63 P bass, the American Vintage series underwent a bit of a transformation and they started just being a bit better, and they were better value for money, I think, so the price came down a little bit as well. So incredibly well built, but as you say, be aware that the neck is very unlike any other P bass available. So if you like the feel of it, then by all means, like, my opinion of them is very, very high, but they have got a bit of a quirk in terms of how the neck feels. So get down and try one out is what I'd highly recommend.
Absolutely.
Gents, we're up at time, so we should wrap this one up. We are going to continue the conversation over on Patreon. Patreon.com/guitar nerds, where from as little as $5 a month, you get an extra half an hour of Guitar Nerds content every week. And from $10 a month, you get your name read out. Like this.
Hold on. Yeah. No, go on. Do something.
Joe's got to find the podcast. I'm going to tell people what weird. So this week on the Patreon, we're going to talk about my top 5 tips for surviving a guitar shop. Because guitar shops can be quite terrifying places, I think, if you're looking to buy a guitar, and can be confusing, but they don't have to be. They can be wonderful places and fantastic places where people like us have all worked.
I wasn't very good.
No, you're useless. But I think that's because you're sort of generally rude, bit salty, bit bitter.
Yeah, I was really. It was what was really good was there was a door to the bass department that I worked in. And I could close that.
Yeah, I mean, you're probably the rudest person I've ever met.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we're going to talk about our 5 top tips for surviving and buying a guitar from a guitar store. So that's over on patreon.com/guitar nerds, where these lovely people are pledging $10 a month and are our executive producers.
Angela Merkel, Tony Blair, Carlos Menchel.
Read the names out properly.
Steve Merkel, Blair Toms, Carlos Manger, Andrew Marco, Mark Cross, J.D. Short, David Carroll, Andy McKenzie, Brad Pitt, Paul Corrigan, Jack Godfrey, Godroy, Godfrey, Conroy, Will Clare, Scott O'Brien, Matt Quine, Phil Tomsett, Wesley Snipes, Laurie Anstis, Moo Gravett, Colin Anderson.
And I like that Wesley Snipes is a contributor, because isn't he still in prison for tax fraud?
Is he?
Yeah, I think so. So that's good times. Anyway, so that's patreon.com/guitar nerds. Go there and you can hear all the information we just talked about. You can also go to the Facebook group where you can join in the conversation. facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum. Go to the Amplify page where you can watch us do this live every week. Amply.fi/guitar nerds. You can go to the Instagram that Matt is running. We're just at Guitar Nerds. We're at Guitar Nerds on Twitter, youtube.com/guitar nerds videos for a whole bunch of demos and lists and stuff.
Yes.
Or you can follow us individually. I'm at @mark_random. Matt is @matt_nightsy. Joe is @joseph_900.
Well done.
And follow Jay's adventures for the next few weeks, because he's not going to be around, @jaybn1 on the Twitter. Thanks very much, and join us next week.
See you later, gang.
Cheers.
Farewell.
Bye-bye.
Join us on Patreon. Bye-bye.